Welcome to the DLF Dynasty Podcast with your hosts, Dan Myler, Ryan McDowell, and Matt Price.
Yeah, we are the DLF Dynasty Podcast. I am Dan Myler. There is Matt Price. We are without our guy Ryan McDowell this week. It's spring break for those teachers, so he's away. I'd like to say he's on assignment, but he's just chilling on the beach, Matt. I know you live in that kind of area of the country where you can just hang out on the beach. I live in the Midwest where that's not an option, so I'm jealous of both of you guys this week.
Listen, I don't know if it's an excuse. I'm less than 1 week from a shoulder surgery and I'm here, but Ryan's on a beach, you know, so.
So you feel bad too. So it's just us two guys that feel bad and Ryan getting a suntan.
Feeling pretty good.
Hanging out with his family. So we'll try to do a pod that keeps everybody informed, but just know in our hearts that we have some vengeance to take out on McDowell when he gets back. It's episode 613 of the show. We got four rookies to talk about in the 2024 class. We're kicking it up a notch because we're getting close to draft time. We got to jump in the Dynasty Doppelganger as well. That's going to be a fun conversation. But first, we got to hit the startup.
The startup.
So not a lot of news this part of the season, right? But the owners' meetings happened, and the group of those that make the rules in the NFL got together. And they came up with this new kickoff rule. And if you're not aware, they're adapting to the XFL rule. And it passed with flying colors, really. Only a few teams that voted against it. Seems we're going to have a new kickoff rule, Matt. You looked up the language of that rule. Tell our listeners about it if they haven't heard already.
Yeah, there's a lot of parts to this one, but I'm excited about it. It's going to change. It's going to make the kickoffs relevant again, I think, for fantasy football as well, that we're going to have to do some studying up on to figure out how that's going to affect our points for return yardage leagues. But this is really fun because it's going to essentially encourage both teams to, I'll just say the play better, I guess. So basically, when the kickoff happens, no players can move except for the kicker or the returner. Like nobody else in they just have to freeze until the ball goes through the air, lands in the returner's hands, and then that's when the other players can move. And it's also going to change the location of where the kicking team lines up. The kicker remains the same back on their own 35, but the kicking team, they're lining up on the receiving team's 40-yard line. So they are much closer to the returner than previously. The other part of this is the kicking team really doesn't want to kick it into the end zone or out of the end zone, which we know has, you know, become basically the main what happens on a kickoff on 99% of kickoffs, right? The kicking team doesn't want to do that anymore because if they kick it in the end zone or out of the end zone, now the receiving team gets it on the 30-yard line. So their goal is really to land it between the 0 and the 20. And that means a lot more returns. Last season, we saw an average just over one return per game. And if we go back and look at the XFL rules for this, 97% of kickoffs were returned. So we're going to go from one per game to 5, 6, maybe more. And that's going to bring a lot of fun to the NFL, I think. I know the goal was to reduce the injuries that happen on kickoffs, right? Because you're reducing the amount of space that these players have to build up before collisions happen. But from a fantasy standpoint and from a football standpoint, we're going to get more exciting plays because these teams are going to be encouraged to run the ball out.
Yeah, it's a unique rule. And those of you that have gone back and looked at some of those XFL returns, they're fun. They're exciting. For sure. And the teams that have a good returner and more than just having good, like incredible raw speed, it's vision and the ability to hit the hole with proper timing that's going to affect things. I went back and looked, Matt. In 2023, there were four returns for touchdowns, which doesn't seem like all that many. I didn't look at how many returns in general there were. Back in 2022, just 6. In 2021, there were 9 touchdowns, and in 2020, there were 7. If you watched football last year, you got used to the guy either watching it go over his head with his two arms spread out, right, to indicate touchback to his teammates, or he caught it and he put his knee on the ground almost exclusively. There were very few returns in games. You mentioned less than one a game. The leading returners in the league had 30 returns. That was Keyshawn Nixon of our Packers. After that, Xavier Gibson of the Jets had 22. And then there were some guys in the mid-teens. There weren't all that many returns. Just to make it very blunt, I know if you watch football, you already know that. That's absolutely going to change. With the average return going from one per game per team up to four, we expect almost every return to be brought out of the end zone or at least returned out from the one or two, which is obviously going to be the goal of these kickers to land it in the field of play. So for us as dynasty managers, and this may not be a factor at all for some of you in some leagues, because you don't get return yardage. But for those of us that do, there are a certain amount of players that you have as your wide receiver six or wide receiver seven, maybe your RB four, that is also the kick returner. And that could factor in this season. If you're getting, you know, a point for every 20 return yards, a point for every 25 return yards, there could be a point where you have to consider these guys because they may score some points for you, man.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be really exciting to see if how the NFL treats this new rule in the draft. Are we going to see, you know, more special teams players, more kick returners that may ordinarily have not have been drafted in the NFL draft, you know, based on their speed and their ability to pick up yardage quickly with this new kickoff return rule. So how is it going to affect that draft? How is it going to affect players within that? Are we going to see, you know, are we going to see more players potentially that didn't used to return kicks now get to return kicks and add that to their fantasy value? So, I mean, I don't personally commission any leagues with return yardage points, just touchdowns. But I kind of want to make one now that kind of emphasizes this position, because you said it's 30, like the top in the NFL was 30 returns last year. I think we see that number go to 60, 65. Easily.
The touchdowns? Because these guys that are coming down covering at full speed are not going to be at full speed. And there are so many unknowns about how these special teams coordinators will adjust and make running lanes for these return guys that are so athletic and able to get to full speed so quickly. Will we see that four touchdowns that we saw last year? And if you remember back, Andrew Beck had one of those returns for a touchdown. Remember, that was kind of a weird play where a tight end ends up in the end zone. Does that go from 4 to 24? And is the league going to adjust the rule because of that? Should we as commissioners right now, Matt, be making an adjustment for that? Or should we lay back and see how year one of this rule goes? Of course, they said they're only keeping this rule intact for 1 year and going to look again next March and see if they need to adjust it. Should we be sitting back and see how that goes before making any adjustments to our scoring systems?
Yeah, I think we have to wait and see how it works out. I think when we move from, I don't think it's nearly as impactful probably as the schedule change when we went to 17 games and kind of had to figure out how we're going to adjust our playoff situation in fantasy. But I think it's similar to that, and that most people will just wait and see. And Rich McKay, the I think he's the competition committee chair, something like that, he says he expects between 50 and 60% of kickoffs to be returned now, which is going to add about 1,000 plays to the NFL season. So it's a lot of touches. We just have to see if it's players that are going to, you know, how the scoring is going to affect those players that we wouldn't normally start in a fantasy lineup. I think the thing we should be looking for off the cuff is which players that normally don't return kicks may get moved into that role. Maybe like high profile rookies, like one we're going to talk about today from Texas, Dan. He's the one I could think of that could really take advantage of this rule.
Yeah, there are a handful of them. I looked through the list of players that returned the most kicks and the list of players that had the most return yardage and average for 2023. And the list is not a who's who of fantasy producers. In fact, the biggest name that I probably saw was a player that you didn't start or didn't at least want to start, but was excited about his upside. Guys like Marvin Mims and Rashid Shaheed, those guys we were holding on to on our roster, hoping they get the chance to participate on offense, but they were relegated to return duties. And although they were explosive and made some plays on offense as well as in the return game, they certainly were not in our lineup. If there were rules, however, that added points for those returns, there could be a big change to the fantasy landscape. So it's something to keep in mind. Certainly not our normal startup conversation that we have, Matt, but something that dynasty managers, especially those that already have this rule in place, should take note of before the season starts. Before we get to the rest of the show, let's take a few seconds to listen to this week's sponsor for the show. This week's episode of the podcast is brought to you by the guys over at DraftKings and that newest product that I've been talking about the last few weeks. It's called Pick Six. It's a pick'em style platform where you choose players to have more or less of a certain stat, things like passing yards, rushing yards, etc. But the twist that DK has made is that it's a peer-to-peer platform. So if you're contrarian and you outsmart your opponents, the winnings can be massive. It's also available in 21 states, including some that don't even have sports betting. I live in one of those states that don't allow sports betting, but Pick 6 is available, and I can tell you I already love it, and I think you will too. So sign up using our link in the show notes, and you're going to get a brand new offer as the weather gets warmer and those Pick 6 offers start heating up with it. New customers can get an instant 100% deposit match up to $100 in Pick 6 credits. So check it out, check out those show notes, and sign up today.
Dynasty Doppelganger.
Yeah, this is a topic we like to cover from time to time. Of course, there's new DLF ADP on the website. We're collecting new ADP for April, but March ADP is already up there. You can check that out on dynastyleaguefootball.com. And there are a handful of similar ADPs. In fact, they're the exact same. We thought we'd cover those and debate which side we'd like to be on. It starts at the wide receiver position with an ADP at 32.67, Matt. That's Drake London and Rashee Rice. They tie for wide receiver 20 in our ADP. Which of these guys would you prefer if you're on the clock?
Yeah, this one's going to make me reevaluate my rankings. I think I currently have Rashee Rice at wide receiver 11, which is maybe a little high. I have Drake London at wide receiver 16. The players between them are Tank Dell, Brandon Ayuk, Jordan Addison, and DK Metcalf. I feel like I probably need to move Drake London up a little bit to reflect his new quarterback situation. I am very excited about that new situation in Atlanta with those guys, but I think I know we have this. I guess we're not going to talk about the details, but we have this new thing that happened with Rashee Rice now that he had to go race a Corvette, right? So we have to see what's going to happen with that, if he's going to get any kind of suspension from that kind of situation. But that does make me want to move Rice down a little bit. But I still think I want him over, just slightly over Drake London right now because of his offensive situation, assuming that this suspension or whatever it is isn't too terrible.
You mentioned the quarterback, and I agree with you. You get Kirk Cousins, and you move on from the kind of blah situation that they had in Atlanta last year. That's a huge upgrade. But the guy we're debating against is Rashee Rice, who's got the man, right? The beast at quarterback, getting him the football. So it's hard to look at it and say, man, London gets such an upgrade. But honestly, that's how I feel about it. I really do feel that of all the weapons in Atlanta, I think Drake London, he gets the biggest bump from adding Kirk Cousins under center. Cousins is, his strength is getting the ball out on time, quickly when necessary, and on target, right? And that just fits so well with what Drake London does. That ability to get open, that ability to be in the right spot at the right time. I really do feel like Kirk Cousins is going to fall in love with getting Drake London the ball early and often. And then when you add the upside of London in the red zone, I really do think he could make a big jump for dynasty managers. So I'm excited about my shares there. With all that said, though, Rashee Rice just, honestly, he brings more more oomph on the trade market right now because he's attached to that Chiefs offense and Patrick Mahomes. So I don't blame anybody who wants to take Rashi Rice. My gut just tells me that Drake London's in for a breakout season, a real breakout season. Not one of those seasons where you happen to catch 10 touchdowns out of your 60 catches. I think we're looking at triple-digit targets. I think double-digit touchdowns are probably what should be not only hoped for, but maybe even expected in that offense with Kirk Cousins. So the breakout is going to happen, I feel. And I'm taking Drake London if I'm on the clock.
That's fair. Do you think are people at the point yet where they think that Marquise Brown is going to outproduce Rashi Rice next season?
I think there are people out there that want to believe that because of all the speed and what we've seen in the past with Hollywood both getting open in the past and then Mahomes using those speed receivers like he has. But Hollywood Brown is no Tyreek Hill, and those on Twitter or anywhere else that are suggesting he's going to be the next Tyreek just because he's fast need to take a step back and think twice, right?
Yeah, and I mean, I think I probably do. If we go back to like our how I felt about these players as prospects, I think we probably both like Drake London more than Rashi Rice. And
right.
And if the situation doesn't improve that much, then you know, maybe you've sold me. I still think that, you know, I still have Kyle Pitts colored glasses on. So that's the situation that I see the biggest upgrade there. But I think you're probably right.
I do think you made a good point with Hollywood, though, that's another mouth to feed in that offense. He is going to mix in well there. So at least he's going to take more targets than guys like MVS got last year. Right. And that could affect Rice. We'll see what happens with Kelsey there, another year older and all those things. Let's move on to the next doppelganger at 53.17 in our ADP. It's tight end Brock Bowers. So a rookie along with a wide receiver, Christian Watson of the Packers. He's wide receiver 31, Bowers tight end 5. They have the exact same ADP, Matt. So which way are you leaning here?
I've got, I guess I'm ahead on consensus on all these guys. I've got Christian Watson at wide receiver 25, so above his wide receiver 31 ADP. That said, I don't have Bowers ranked yet because they're not in our system until they get drafted, but I think I'm going to take Bowers here. I'm just not sure that Christian Watson is a true wide receiver one for either NFL purposes or fantasy purposes, but I'm almost positive that Brock Bowers is a tight end one for both of those purposes. And I know you weren't as excited about Bowers as maybe Brian and I were last week when we talked about him, but I'm curious where you're going here. Cause for me, I think it's pretty easy. It's Bowers.
It's not easy for me, but I'm leaning towards Bowers as well. These two in the dynasty space are going in opposite directions, right? Bowers seems to have all the momentum. He's going to get drafted high. Most likely, you know, there's so many good landing spots for Bowers that it almost feels like it's unlikely that he lands somewhere that we don't want to see him, right? So feels like everything's going in the positive there. Meanwhile, Christian Watson, the latest reports from Green Bay on Watson are they're sending him to specialists to try to figure out this hamstring injury. And that just doesn't leave a good taste in dynasty managers' mouths. If this is such a big problem that the head coach and the general manager in Green Bay are commenting during draft season about this so-called star receiver and all the injuries that he's dealt with over his two seasons in the league. I'm excited about Christian Watson. I still think he has elite weekly upside, but I'm as scared as everybody with this injury potential with him because it just doesn't go away. Meanwhile, Brock Bowers, it really does feel like every dynasty manager has a soft spot for him at this point because we're all looking for that next big thing at tight end, and he seems to be it. The next guys we got to debate here, Matt, are way down at 85.67 in our ADP. It's running back Brian Robinson Jr. for Washington. And then another rookie, Ladd McConkey, who's wide receiver 45, but all the way up at 85 in our ADP. And I got to tell you, Matt, you know, if Ryan was here, he'd be pounding the table for the wide receiver. I can't get away from that. There's no way I take a mid running back like Brian Robinson over somebody with the upside of Ladd McConkey, who just drips of potential and the opportunity for him to land in an offense that uses him to all his strengths. I really do feel like this is a runaway. If anybody takes Brian Robinson over Ladd McConkey, I think they need to rethink it.
Yeah. I mean, you presumably could get Brian Robinson and like a second on top of that, at least. Right. I'm not the biggest Ladd McConkey fan, but I mean, but Brian Robinson, I'm definitely not a fan of. He's not going to catch. I mean, I know he caught more passes last year than he did his rookie season, but now Austin Eckler's in town. I'm pretty sure all the pass catching running back duty is going his way. So yeah, this is an easy one for McConkey.
Yeah, we're both taking McConkey. I think everybody else is as well. And even if you aren't a huge fan of him, the things that he put on tape at Georgia make you see the upside of him catching. He could have these 7, 8, 9 catch games, and maybe they're underneath, but there's just so many fantasy points available there with McConkey. Last group that we should talk about here, a couple rookies here, different positions, though. Your guy, Ray Davis from Kentucky, who I know you're high on, Matt. He's at RB 46, 147.17 overall in our ADP. He's teamed up here with Ricky Pearsall, the Florida wide receiver 66. Which side of the debate do you stand on here?
I mean, this one's really tough because I really like both players quite a bit. But in this range of the draft, I typically will break ties in favor of the running back, especially one I like as much as Ray Davis. I've been participating in some of these new April rookie mocks we've been doing, and you see Ray Davis fall into the third, sometimes the mid to late third round, and stupid me, I'm taking him in the mid to late second at like almost every time because I just really like the player. And if draft capital comes in and blows that value out of the water, he sinks, he lands in a bad spot, I'm going to have to reevaluate. But I just think that running backs from a rookie standpoint, they have a better chance of getting on the field in most cases in terms of having a significant role in year one. So I'm going to go with my guy, Ray Davis.
Yeah. I'm on the other side of this. I do rookie rankings. So I have an option of ranking these guys against one another. You may not yet because they haven't been drafted, but we're in the business over on the rookie side of ranking these guys early. So I have Ricky Pearsall at 25 overall in my single quarterback rankings. I have Ray Davis at 33. So I'm maybe with consensus that Davis belongs in that mid-range of the third round. And I understand the things that you like about him, Matt. I certainly do too. But there's an equal or maybe even greater amount of things to like about Pearsall's game and the potential for him to land way higher in the NFL draft. There's rumblings, I would say, that he could end up in the late second round of the NFL draft. And if Ray Davis falls to day three, maybe even round four or five of the draft, there's going to be a big change or we're going to have to alter those rankings if we're flip-flopping these guys. So I'll take Pearsall. I really like his upside and think he has day two potential in the NFL draft. In fact, I'd be shocked if he doesn't go there. So I'll stick with him. Also, you know, I tend to be on the other side of things. I like to take the receivers in this range more than the running backs. And I know we get the early return on the running backs, but a lot of times the big upside lands with the wide receivers.
You're just hunting for Puka Nacua this year. You're hunting for Tank Dell again.
We talked about a couple of them here with Ladd McConkey and Ricky Pearsall. Those guys could be the next Dell or the next Puka Nacua. You never know. I don't know if Ray Davis is the next. Who's the next
Mark Ingram.
All right. Mark Ingram, who is drafted high in the draft. Maybe David Johnson. That would be the one. I don't know if he lands in that tier. So let's get to our rookie report and talk about some of these other rookies.
It's time for the rookie report.
Yeah, you teased it earlier. The first guy we need to talk about here is wide receiver Xavier Worthy from Texas. Matt, a very exciting player, certainly a guy that has a lot of burst and explosion to his game. His RAS score was very strong. His athleticism score, if you look over on NFL.com, very strong as well. A guy that plays at another level, if you look at speed, right? That 4.21 40-yard dash that he posted at the NFL Combine, a record breaker, and a guy that that just looks like a player that size and speed is going to be, you know, depending on who, what side of that debate you land on, you could be a lover or a hater of Xavier Worthy.
Yeah, I absolutely love him. He has a, I think, I don't know if people are doing it, but I feel like people are going to compare him a little bit to Tank Dell just because of his usage. You know, he's a smaller guy, but he actually played 70% of his snaps outside, only 30% in the slot. So despite 5'11", 165, he's shown the ability to play outside. We talked about the new kickoff return rules at the top, Dan. This guy had more punt return yards than anyone in FBS last year. And if his 4.2 speed, you mentioned it, what happens when the defense can't move or the kicking team can't move until he touches the ball? Like, I don't know if they'll use him that way in the NFL as a returner. But if he does, that's very exciting. As a wide receiver, I mean, I think he's the perfect wide receiver for this era of the NFL where we see all these two high safety looks. They want to take away the deep ball. You know, he has that deep speed clearly. But he can create instant separation in and out of his breaks to the short area of the field. He uses stutter steps constantly to get his man off the balance. And then after the catch, this is the thing that really separates him, is he's just such a creative runner. He creates his own space with all kinds of different moves, from head fakes, to, again, stutter steps, all kinds of stuff. And another thing that really impresses me about him, Dan, despite his size, I feel like he has surprising contact balance for his size. Like, he absorbs blows and redirects contact. He's really good.
Yeah, I can't disagree with anything you said there. And you know, the contact balance shows up in those returns that you mentioned.
Yeah.
There are times when guys get their hands or get a shoulder into him and he stays vertical and doesn't lose any speed, and that's what gets you excited about the potential, both as a returner and then also not only on those deep balls, which obviously he's going to stretch the field for an NFL team, but also the bubble screens and the quick hitters that he can get his hands on the ball and become a runner, become that returner immediately, and turn that 1 yard hitch or bubble screen into a 60 yard touchdown. That's really the strength of his game. When I got done watching Xavier Worthy, Matt, I wrote down one word, and it's fear. NFL defensive coordinators they fear his speed. Defensive backs fear him. You can't get up and try to press him despite his 165-pound frame because he'll simply run by you. Now, maybe teams try to press him at the line of scrimmage and keep a safety over the top, but are we really going to have double coverage on a rookie receiver that's looking at, you know, like the draft capital of a wide receiver two in the NFL, not a like truly elite NFL wide receiver? I'm excited about his upside. I think there's weaknesses there, and we'll get to that here in a minute, but I really do feel like he can create so much underneath because of the speed and the fear that he inflicts on the defense, that separation is inevitable. He's going to be open, whether that be on a crossing route underneath or that slant and go, that double move that we saw from time to time at Texas, or just a straight nine route where he runs by everybody. I tried to come into this season, Matt, thinking I'm going to be open to these smaller, more lean wide receivers that have that explosion like Xavier Worthy has. And he measured in at 5'11", 165. If you're not going to do it with a guy like Worthy, if you're not going to accept him, as a dynasty manager, you're never going to accept this framed player.
Well, and just to piggyback off that, like, you do see people out there saying that, like, him being this fast is a bad thing for his profile. And like, if you compare that, to guys like John Ross, you compare that to like Tyquan Thornton, all these other speed profiles, they do not have the production profile. They do not have the route running ability as a guy like Xavier Worthy. It's just completely different levels of NFL draft capital and how they're going to perform on the field, in my opinion. You know, he's like, he wins at all three levels. I don't think you could ever have said that about John Ross or Tyquan Thornton. Like, he disguises, like you said, Dan, when he, if they press him, he's just going to run right by him. If they play off coverage, he's just going to cut a slant. And now he's in the middle of the open field with space. And it might even be a more productive play than the vertical would have been. So like, he's going to be real hard to defend. Like he, if he's as versatile, if they use him, his versatility the same way they used him in college, like the NFL is going to have a problem with Xavier Worthy.
Yeah. And the other things that we get excited about in the dynasty space, right, are breakout age and how productive you are early in your career and what college competition did you face. And Xavier Worthy, he handled all of that. He was an 18-year-old, maybe even a late 17 when he started as a freshman at Texas. And he had the production is out of this world, right? 12 games, 62 catches as a 17/18-year-old freshman, 981 yards and 12 touchdowns. He had to stay for two more seasons where he caught 60-plus passes, went over 1,000 yards last year on 75 grabs, only scored 5 touchdowns last year, but maybe that has more to do with the quarterback play and all those things. The explosion and the ability to consistently come up with separation are what matters to us in the dynasty space, and Worthy just has goobs and gobs and all this proof of it, right? You never turn on Xavier Worthy and think to yourself, well, that guy can't get open in the NFL. He's just too fast for you to believe that.
Yeah.
So if it comes to the negatives, Matt, everybody that is a naysayer is going to point to the size. Everything's going to come back to size, and that, you know, he's small and he doesn't have the body composition or the strength to deal with physical NFL corners, and men are going to push him around, all those kind of things. But we've heard this about other guys of his stature, and sometimes it doesn't matter. I don't think it matters with Xavier Worthy. He's just that explosive.
We have examples of this. We have examples of this profile working in the NFL. Like, there's no reason to say it can't work anymore. Maybe it's rare that it works. I can understand someone coming at it from that. They want to play the probability game, but we have examples in the NFL of it working, whether you want to talk about Tank Dell, whether you want to talk about Devontae Smith. I'm sure there are other ones that we could talk about. But when we do talk about the negatives, I only really have, I guess, really only two. And one of them is it bothers me a little bit that how good he was as a freshman, like he didn't continue to really like take that. And they never really took that next step to have that massive, you know, like 13, 14, 1500 yard season. I know we got an increased level of competition, so production dipped a little bit, maybe because A.D. Mitchell came into town. I'm not sure, but that part does bother me a little bit. And then, like you said, the other thing is size related. You know, he's going to have a little bit of a limited catch radius, and he's probably not going to win too many contested catches. But that's not the style of receiver he is, so those things don't really bother me that much.
Yeah, I don't care that he can't make a contested catch because nobody's going to be close to him, right? So we got to worry about what's actually going to happen on the field, and it's just not that, in my opinion. So when it comes to rankings, Matt, where do you feel comfortable if you're doing a rookie draft right now, today, where you feel comfortable taking him?
I really want to take him at 4, but sometimes I take Brian as the wide receiver 4, but I sometimes want to take Brian Thomas there too. So I go back and forth on those two. I think I like Worthy better, but I definitely want some exposure to Brian Thomas. So I'll probably take both of them in that range.
I like Brian Thomas. I'm never going to take him over Brian Thomas. I'll take Brian Thomas every time. He fits into the definitely want him over Troy Franklin, but I can't take him over Brian Thomas kind of tier, which lands in the middle of the first in single quarterback. And maybe he gets pushed down a couple of spots in super flex because those quarterbacks are going to land ahead of him. But it just speaks to the depth of this class and how you can be excited about having the 8th or maybe even 9th pick because Xavier Worthy is going to be on the market right there late in the first round. Next guy we should talk about here, another wide receiver, Devontez Walker from UNC, Matt. He's 25th overall in our consensus rankings at wide receiver 15. I was not really privy to a lot of Devontez Walker film, I guess. I didn't really think a lot about him until you really dig into Drake May and you start watching him, and this guy Walker starts popping up from time to time. It's not surprising that he's a fringe second round pick right now before NFL draft, if you consider him in dynasty.
Yeah, he's a little bit tougher of a prospect for me. I do like some things about him. You know, like just right from the jump, he just explodes off the line of scrimmage. You know, he can run by players similar to the way Worthy runs by players with that 4.36 40 with a tad more size, about 30 pounds or so he's got on Worthy. The deep speed though, it's kind of build up, right? Like he's that long strider type, so it's kind of deceptive, and he takes a little bit ways to get there sometimes. But it's clear he's a deep threat according to PFF's ADOT data. He has an ADOT of 18.2. His average depth of target is 18 yards down the field. But you know, he's just raw, right? He's just really raw. He needs to develop wide receiver skills. He needs to learn a more extensive route tree. Maybe it's just because they didn't ask him to do it, but you didn't see really any, like, I struggled to find short and intermediate targets for him. It was almost all deep targets. So I question like the change of direction skills, that kind of thing. The catch rate, 58% catch rate, not super good. And if Drake May, Dan, you were talking before that you've come around on Drake May again, you're really impressed with him. If Drake May is as good as you think and as people think, then like that catch rate has to be more on Walker than Drake May, doesn't it?
Yeah, I see where you're coming from there. He's kind of a physical guy without the 6'3 frame. He's 6'1 and a half and 193. He plays the role of a big receiver, and he's not massive. He's not that big, right? So there are things that make you think twice about his potential, and if he's able to develop some of the things that you were talking about there, Matt, maybe that speed that he showed at the combine, he ran sub 4.4, and that ability to rise up and make big plays above the rim, a 40 and a half inch vertical, maybe that shows up more often in the NFL than it did in college. You mentioned the catch rate, and that is a little bit of a concern. There were times when I thought to myself, watching May and himself, that those two guys weren't on exactly the same page. It felt like he maybe was I don't know if this is true, but like one of them one trick ponies or a guy that only wanted to do one thing and get down the field and make plays and wasn't necessarily as comfortable in a different role. So I'm not exactly sure how to read into him, but there are times when you watch Devontae Walker where you think to yourself, that's an NFL receiver, despite the lack of big time speed and those kind of things. And you think to yourself, maybe that could even be a wide receiver one in the NFL. I don't see him as a great route runner, Matt. I don't see him like he doesn't make corners look silly at the top of his route or anything like that. Can that all be refined? Is an NFL coach going to get a hold of him and turn him into the kind of route runner that really unlocks his elite, the highest of upsides for him? Because that's what he really needs. He needs to find something that creates that separation, all the time, really.
Yeah, I just, like, I don't know how many times do we see, I don't have any statistics on this, but it doesn't seem like players come to the NFL and get a lot of development, you know, from that perspective, unless they're going to be highly drafted and they just aren't working out. Maybe they aren't what the coaches thought they were. So they have invested so much in them that they're going to work with them to develop that extra route tree, have them do more things than they were asked to do in college. And if he gets, you know, late day two capital, if that's on the table, then maybe he gets that. But if he doesn't, then like, to me, he becomes a deep threat. And, you know, for fantasy purposes, that can be really good, but it can also be real bad. And you talked about the jump ball stuff. I think his jump ball is okay, but I do question his physicality. Like, he does get pushed around a lot on some of those catches up there. But he tracks the ball deep so well. So, I mean, he can accelerate and catch up to overthrown passes. And he's just a really, really a fluid athlete. And we confirm that athleticism at the combine. Right. So, I mean, he's really hard to rank for me, Dan. I have him in the wide receiver 12 to 15 range, somewhere in there. I don't really want to get him above. I don't want to put guys like Jalen McMillan below him. I want McMillan ahead of him. I want like the running back 5 to 6 ahead of him, like Blake Corum kind of range. I think I want Corley and Pearsall over him. Roman Wilson is a question. I'm not sure, but he's like in that range, right?
I'm taking Roman Wilson every single time, but that's a different receiver. Yeah. We're talking about a slot guy that can uncover and make plays. Right. You know, we're talking about a 6-7 catch guy, not a 2 or 3 catch guy. I'm going to go back. You guys are going to shake your head because I'm a Big Ten guy and I watch a Big Ten. He's Donovan Peoples-Jones. That's what DeVontez Walker is to me. I don't think he's – go ahead.
I was going to say maybe faster. I don't know. Maybe I'm misremembering. He's a little bit faster.
I think DPJ had a good 40 time, didn't he? He was in the low 4.4s or something like that, and I was excited about him. But he had the vertical skills and made the plays above the rim, was explosive with the broad jump, and that's all the things that we say now about DeVontez Walker. I'm going to compare those two after the show, I know, because that's the name that jumped into my head.
One thing I do want to bring up, and it could be a concern, you mentioned that maybe they didn't seem like they were always on the same page, him and Drake May. He did have eligibility concerns transferring from Kent State, so he only played in 8 games. So maybe he missed the early part of the development phase where, you know, they're developing rapport with their quarterback. So maybe that was part of it. Hopefully it was. And we'll see some of this natural ability that he has really get developed in the pros.
I'm very interested in the draft capital. That it's going to point me in the direction because I could fall in love with him if he somehow lands in round 2. If he slips to late round 3, round 4, he's gonna just blend in with the rest of those receivers that you were talking about. How about a running back? Let's talk about one of those. There's I think you've talked about Dylan Love a little bit, right?
I do.
You're a fan, right?
I do. I really like Dylan Love. You have to temper your expectations for a player with his profile, but like these kinds of players, they have a habit of sticking around in the NFL and being, you know, maybe not fantasy superstars, but certainly startable and productive for many years. I liken to him some kind of like a James White kind of profile. He's just really good, a really good pass catcher, maybe the best pass catching running back in the class, to be honest with you. He had 68 receptions this year, 49 last year, 2 more seasons with 20 plus receptions. 5'10", 206. You see him out there running wide receiver drills. He runs fades. He runs deep outs. He makes one-handed receptions. He's, you know, sudden in and out of breaks. Sounds like we're talking like a receiver, but this is a running back that's doing that, right? As a runner, I mean, you know, he's not super powerful. He does have pretty good vision, I think. He presses the line, gets defenders to commit to a certain direction before bouncing back to the cutback lane. He reads his blocks downfield well. He's a natural runner, but he's not going to make a ton of people miss. He's not going to run over anybody. So, you know, and he's 24 years old. So you have to take everything with a grain of salt, but he is, I think, the best receiving back in the class, and he's going to make an NFL team. And I think he's going to be a coach's favorite. I don't want to compare him to it's probably not even really fair to do that, but like Danny Woodhead, like that kind of like utility player, jack of all trades kind of player for a NFL offense that coaches are going to love. And I think we'll, you know, get on the field. You know, he's going to see what can he get 5 targets a game. I think a guy like Dylan Lobb could.
Yeah, I like what you said there. I especially like the James White thing. Of course, I'm a Badgers fan, so I watched a lot of him, and he was underrated coming out of college. Not exactly the small school that New Hampshire is that Lobb comes out of now, but I believe he was a 5th-year senior. Correct me if I'm wrong there, but a guy that despite like maybe his physical limitations or maybe I should say explosive limitations, he seems like a football player, like a guy he's a football player, and he just happens to play running back, and he does everything that a running back's asked to do. He's gonna be a special team stud and a guy that comes in and has to fill in for a starter and has a massive game because of it, and you know, goes on one of those 2 or 3 week runs that saves a fantasy season or maybe even wins a fantasy manager a title. I do not think that Dylan Lobb is going to be the guy that we ever draft in the 3rd or 4th round of our startup draft or anything like that. We're looking at a guy that if you can pick him up in the 4th round of your rookie draft this year, roll the dice, because he's going to get a chance at some point, and he's never disappointed anybody in his football career. I think that's going to be true of dynasty managers too. He's going to, he's going to have some games that makes us think, yeah, that's a good guy to have on my team.
Yeah, I like him. I'm happy to spend a third round pick on him. If Ray Davis isn't there in the third round, I'm happy to spend it on someone like Lobb in the late third. He's been even going into the fourth round, I've seen in some mocks. So like, he's a complete dart throw that I think could, you know, would you really be that surprised if you started him three times in a fantasy season?
That's the kind of guy he is.
Like,
and you remember you mentioned kick returns and stuff. That's part of his game as well. A guy that if you watch a highlight film, you're going to see a couple of returns for touchdowns where he looks pretty explosive. Granted, against maybe second level college competition. One more that we need to talk to, or at least talk about. I wish we could talk to Jacob Cowing of Arizona, wide receiver prospect. That's way down there, wide receiver 21 in our rankings, 39 overall. So we're talking about another fourth rounder here, Matt. When you watch Jacob Cowing, what jumped off for you?
It's that short area burst, kind of after the catch ability that he has. He's one of those quicker than fast player, and you know the routes definitely, especially downfield routes, need some development. But like on comebacks, on slants, on quick outs, like he's like instant yak for a team. I liked him quite a bit more than I thought I was gonna be watching him. I don't want to say he's like the discount Xavier Worthy, because Worthy is way more developed in a lot of ways, but he's got the 4.38 speed, 5.8 168, similar size. But I do think he's going to be a true slot in the NFL. Mm-hmm. He is a fifth year player, which you don't always like, but like, even if he doesn't develop the routes, I really do think that like, if a team just puts him in the slot and has him run slants all day, he could be successful for an NFL team. So he could be a value pick. I don't know if we're really going to see a high volume kind of role from a fantasy standpoint for him, but you know, in the right offense that needs a slot receiver, you could certainly see him have like a, I don't know. Could he be like Hunter Renfro, like a more athletic Hunter Renfro kind of player? Like you could see, I think I could see him in that kind of role if he was to land there, but he's got to get some draft capital. And if he's going to be more than that, he really needs to develop his routes or out tree more.
Yeah. That's not something he was really ever asked to do in college. And I believe he played at UTEP as well, right? He transferred to Arizona. So I saw a little bit of that, like you mentioned, 5 year player in college, but another slight wide receiver, just 5'8", 168, but a guy that you could kind of fall for just a little bit, and you could feel like, man, this guy has some upside. There's some potential here if he gets in the right situation and he gets an opportunity to be that guy in the slot. It's clear at this point, Matt, I think you hit the nail on the head. He is a slot receiver. He's not going to be one of those guys that stretches out wide and makes big plays down the field or anything like that. You're looking at him as more of a quantity over quality, maybe in fantasy, where he's got to pile up some catches. And in order to do that, he needs to get that role and end up on the field a lot. I really like how he finds the end zone. That's something that don't always see of these smaller guys. He's got a nose for it, and he's hungry to find that goal line. That's exciting. He's got like a killer instinct with the ball in the air, even on those underneath routes. Everything belongs to him. He's tougher than he is big, which I like. But you mentioned the negative there. It's the ability to create that separation through route running. He doesn't exactly have that. I think he's Greg Dortch. That's the guy he is, who I've had on Dynasty Manager or rosters many, many times, because he suddenly appears in Arizona and you need a guy that's going to catch some passes and it's his turn there. I think there's a chance that that's exactly what we have in Jacob Cowing.
Yeah, I don't mind that, because Dortch also, I was going to mention that, like, there are times where Cowing gets open deep, like the Alamo Bow game, for example. He splits those.
That was a slot fade, right? Zone.
Yeah, and you've seen Dortch win deep occasionally too. So I don't mind that. That's not bad, Dan. I like it.
Yeah, maybe that's too easy because he played at Arizona and Dortch is in Arizona.
Whatever, our brain makes these connections, you know.
Yeah, it connected for me, and they're a similar size profile. So you know, if you have a fourth round pick and you want to spend it on Cowing, I have no problem with that. He'd be one of the guys on my list for sure. So that's going to do it for this episode of the DLF Dynasty Podcast. For Matt, hopefully Ryan's back next week. I'm Dan. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you again next week.
Thank you for listening to the DLF Dynasty Podcast. Please remember to rate and review and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.